Apparently, being in a band is very much like being in a romantic relationship, to where if it doesn't end in a favorable way, you're very, very heartbroken.
That was musician Sina Sopro, otherwise known as Saria Conaway. She's a solo artist now, and you might be able to see why. This is Cut and Paste, and I'm Willis Arnold.
And I'm Nancy Fowler. We talked with Saria just before the recent release of her new album called Loop Talk 2. And you'll hear more about that later on, but we started by going back to her childhood and how she was first introduced to music.
Why don't you tell us first how you started playing the violin?
This is how I remember this story happening. I was 7 years old in the doctor's office, probably just doing a routine checkup, physical type thing. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, Mom, I want to be a doctor whenever I grow up. Oh, wait, no, I want to be a pediatrician whenever I grow up. I was just thinking of everything that I saw, in the waiting room. And I was like, oh, you should say what your mom is. What does Mom do? I'm like, I don't know. But she plays the violin. And I go, oh, no, Mom, I want to play the violin just like you. And she's like, oh, okay. After the checkup, she takes me. I'm thinking we're going home. We end up driving to Fort Leonard Wood. She signed me up for violin lessons. And I was like, what? Oh, okay. And that's kind of how it happened. And I played violin, and we would do duets together. And it was fun, but also was kind of annoying. Not the music, but my mom would dress us in matching clothing. Because at this time period in my life, I was the same size as her.
Oh, my God. Do you remember what any of those the most horrible of those outfits looked like?
Oh, my God, yeah. So this is like 90s we're talking about here. So I don't even know what they're called. Genie pants, kind of, with some sort of very Native American type colors and designs, like a bunch of diamonds and squiggly lines and like a grid type pattern. White Keds and like a pink shirt or something, like a pink little button-up top. Horribleness. I mean, I never did any professional competitions with my mom. It was all me by myself. But I think she worked for the USGS at the time period in Rolla. And I think it was just the variety shows they had there. So that was the style she wanted. That's what she wanted to wear. So she found an outfit for a child to wear the same thing.
Those were the unfortunate years in terms of clothing, but you were learning to become a musician. So what happened after that?
By age 10, I won third place at state for violin. I kept playing, but I was interested in playing other instruments, mostly the piano. I'm not a pianist at all, by any means. I don't even consider myself a violinist anymore, honestly. I was probably in about junior high, eighth grade, joined the choir. So once I learned how to sight read music and vocally, that's kind of when it all exploded, especially with harmonizing and whatnot, because I was always listening to what the other parts were doing as opposed to what only my part did. And then by high school, I was in, chamber choir, which was the highest choir you can be in, you had to try out for. And I became a huge choir nerd. Everything I did, walking around singing in my car, singing, eating and singing. I'm probably singing in my sleep. I have no idea. I mean, all the time. If I had known that was going to be some of the best years of my life, I probably wouldn't have taken it for granted, because we did a lot of stuff. We performed at Winter Park, Colorado, won first place there. We did all those Six Flags competitions, won first place there. And by my senior year in high school, I was performing at Carnegie Hall with the National Honor Choir, and we were the select featured choir. But not all of us could make the trip. We couldn't afford it, so we didn't sound that good. I have no idea if they were asked to come back.
So you said you don't consider yourself a violinist or a pianist. What do you consider yourself?
Maybe an arranger and a composer. Probably artist first, because I can't really play any of the instruments I play well. I'm not a prodigy at any of the instruments I play. It's just I know how to make it all come together and work in a song or an arrangement to sound aesthetically pleasing to the ear. But if I were just to hey, here's my violin, I'm gonna play you a concerto, solo, you would be horrified. I play the guitar completely wrong, if there's even a right way to play it, but I cannot use a pick to save my life. I just play the way I can play. I know my limitations and I work around it. I couldn't pick up the guitar and play like some sort of Van Halen solo for 5 hours.
And when did you start playing bass?
I didn't start playing an electric instrument until way into my 20s. So 24, 25, something like that. 24. I think it was 24.
What made you pick it up?
actually, interesting story. I went to go visit one of my fellow high school friends, Alan Gurrow, in Nebraska, and he left me as a base. I just missed him. He was moving to New York, and I was just going to go say goodbye, and I missed him by like an hour. And I get there, and it's like, oh, Alan's already left. I'm like, oh, man. And it's like, but he left you something. I'm like, oh, my God, what is it? And I get in there. I'm like, whoa, it's this bass. I picked it up, and I was like, oh, this is just like playing the violin, but backwards. And it has frets, and it tells me where to put my fingers, and just boom. I had it in no time. It was my first band 3 months later. That's pretty much it. Once I got in that band, it just kind of led up to what I'm doing right now type of thing.
I understand that you've been through some bad band breakups.
Yes. Apparently, being in a band is very much like being in a romantic relationship, to where if it doesn't end in a favorable way, you're very, very heartbroken. And one bands I really, really enjoyed back in the day, and I still don't quite understand the breakup, and I still slightly have maybe some hard feelings about it. We were together for a very short time, 3 years. We broke up in 2009. I mean, that's how long ago it is. And I'm still saying I have hurt feelings. Isn't that sad? But it ripped my heart out. I was so devastated. We finally got in a place where the band was doing good things. We were making a name for ourselves in St. Louis. We were writing really, really good material. Personalities all just fit and we gelled. And then one day, one of the founding members is like, I don't want to do it anymore. I'm too old to play in bands. I'm like, what? And then it's like, this is going to be my last show. I'm like, oh, my God, you have to be kidding me. And then ever since then, I was just like, oh. So then like a couple years later after the breakup, I was like, okay, well, Saria, this is ridiculous. Let it go. It's done. It's over. You're on to better things now. But then I learned that he's playing in another band. And I was just like, what? And then it just all kind of like reopened the wound. Like, blah. For the most part, I am pretty much over it. We recorded this album and never released it. I actually was so bitter about the breakup, I considered releasing it solo, and I was going to go in and replay everyone's parts.
Revenge release.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a lot of money and time. But yeah, breakups are hard, especially whenever, like, you know, you're loving it. And that was the reason why I stopped playing in bands for a very long time and just focused on my solo thing. Now I'm at a point where I'm in several bands. I feel comfortable being in them again.
After the band broke up and, you know, you said you started doing some of your own stuff, what was the first show that you played on your own?
First show I ever played was September 27th, 2007 at the Way Out Club. And I remember this because, I don't know, it was very significant for me. The songs were good, but just the approach of me actually doing what I do was probably very cumbersome and boring, watching me just build one loop at a time. I didn't really perfect how to keep the audience engaged the whole time very well. I was really afraid of doing an a cappella song because I thought for sure everyone's going to get up and go to the bar and just kind of zone it out and not listen. And actually the complete opposite happened. People came from the bar and was like, what? And I was like, whoa. And then I get done. And I mean, the crowd just, they blew up. And I was like, wow. No, I thought you guys would think choir stuff was not cool at all. So I would thank you. This makes me feel better about myself.
So you mentioned looping, and not everyone, including myself, fully understands what that is. If you could explain that for us.
Basically, I will record a phrase. It can be as long or short as I want to. I'm in control of that. Once I stop the recording, it will start right back from the beginning and keep just repeating itself over and over and over again. And then I can build on top of that and keep building until like orchestral arrangement is being played. And that's the way I perform and make myself into being a one-person band by looping. You kind of got to stay two steps ahead and don't get too terribly comfortable, which is why whenever I play solo, I can't look at people in the face or the eyes. I look over their heads. If I'm playing in a band, oh yeah, I'll play with the crowd, whatever. I messed up, whoops, whatever. No one's going to know. Just keep on playing, pretend like nothing's wrong. You mess up your instrument while you're looping is like, okay, well, that's going to be stuck in the entire song. So this is going to be bad. How are we going to fix this?
Is there any particular instance when you've actually done that?
One show in particular, Off-Broadway. I had to restart a song 4 times in a row. And after the 3rd time messing up the song, I just stopped, looked at my gear. I turned my back to the stage, to the crowd, and just jumped up and down and just like, come on, man. come on, what's wrong with you? You could do it. And I was like pumping myself up and then turned back around. And the fourth time I played it, I'm like, God, that was horrible, guys. Thanks for sticking around. Like, it was really bad.
What was their reaction?
Oh, they were like, oh, come on, you got it. Wait. I mean, they were just trying to be encouraging, but I'm way harder on myself than I am on anybody else. So I was really just mentally, you know, kicking myself to death.
You know, you've talked about some of the live aspects to your process. When you're actually creating a song that's going to be part of an album release, how do you put that sort of music together?
So the first album was really just songs I would present to bands that I was in at the time period, and they didn't really think they were songs. So then I turned around and recorded them to prove to them, you know, yeah, these are songs. And then I kind of put my spin on it of having like a very orchestral arrangement on it. So they were just standard songs. I wrote them just like most people probably would write songs with an acoustic guitar and just kind of fiddled around and then just wrote all the parts and then went in and recorded it. Now, these Loop Talk series, the reason why they're called Loop Talk is because I created those while performing live, just practicing. And then I had to go back whenever I wanted to record these songs. I was like, okay, this is how I do it live, but the dynamic range is limited because I can only do so much. I can only have 2 hands, 2 feet. I want this to be more impactful on this section. I want the arrangement to be more variant. I have more freedom recording in a studio than I'm very restricted performing live, but that's what makes it fun.
How has your music evolved over time? You know, you're about to release another album. You said it's taken a few years. If you could describe some of the additional elements that somebody could expect from the new album, what might that be?
It's probably a bit more radio-friendly. The first album is very, very orchestral, very, very dense, very, very cinematic. These two albums, while they have the same elements of that, they're more radio-friendly, a bit toned back a little bit. There's still, like, very interesting arrangements happening, but I think it's more accessible to the layperson. A
couple of questions that have to do with food.
Food.
So I understand that you once or perhaps still do have some sort of a nickname involving a popular food.
So I'm 13 years old, 7th grade. Little Caesar's Pizza launched their new pizzerias. They're like, pizza, pizza, pizzeria. I forgot how the commercials went. But I went to school the next day, never really even thought anything about it. And all the kids are like, pizzeria, pizzeria.
And then I understand, I read somewhere that one of your favorite places to eat is your own kitchen.
Oh, yeah. I like to cook. I like to think that I'm good at it. I also like to bake. I wish I had more time to experiment more with baking. Ironically, I am in the middle of prepping. I have 11 pizzas made throughout this week and probably need to make 4 to 8 more because I have no idea how many people are going to be coming to this release. I do like to cook. It's therapeutic sometimes.
Do you make your own pizza crust?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So you're making the music. You're making the pizza. You're pretty much making everything that has to do with this event.
It's a pretty good deal because I'm going to sell the album for $10 after the release. But $7 will get you the pizza. It'll get you beer. I'm going to go to Schlafly and pick up 2 kegs, and they'll get you homemade pizza. I feel like there's a reason to come.
Well, you've missed the pizza and the party, but you can find our music online. That was Saria Conaway, known musically as Sina So Pro. As you can tell, she's truly a one-woman band. She handles all aspects of her music, from recording to playing every instrument to also making the pizza served at her show. I'm Willis Arnold.
And I'm Nancy Fowler. And this is Cut and Paste, a program of St. Louis Public Radio, produced by Willis Arnold
and Nancy Fowler. The music you heard for the intro was Eric Hall. The remainder of the music was all produced by Sina So Pro.
And you can find Cut and Paste online at stlpublicradio.org.